welcome, very special live edition of the Making Sense podcast, where we are going to hopefully ditch the doom, say yes to taking back some control. Because, of course, cost of living crisis has been, I think, the number one thing you guys have been sending me messages about lately. Fair enough, too. It's really hard. Groceries, rent, mortgages, power bills, rates bills. These core costs, incredibly expensive. Lots of people have nothing left after the essentials. In fact, we were even just talking before going live that a lot of people on what should be fine, decent, normal incomes are struggling at the moment. So Lord knows how the people who are on lower incomes are going. So why is it so hard to make ends meet? Now, look, I think two things can be true at the same time, and it's really important. It is one of the things that guides this channel. Yes, it is really difficult out there. But there's also the other thing that's also true, that we have to control the things that we can control in order to try and look after ourselves. So today, we're going to be tackling both of those issues. We're going to dig into what's really going on behind the headlines. What's the lay of the land here? But also, we're going to share some strategies that you can actually use, ways to cut costs without hopefully cutting out all the joy of life, and to make a money plan that works in today's reality. Now, look, absolute powerhouse panel for this live edition of Making Sense. And we're going to try to fit in all of your questions as well as much as we can throughout this session. Drop those into the chat as we go. Let's make the most of this time being live together. But if at any point you need to leave the live session, don't worry, totally fine. The replay will be available on the Making Sense podcast. If you signed up for this, it'll be automatically sent out to you. It will also be available Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. So make sure you hit subscribe there, wherever works for you, so you can listen back to it in your own time. Now, we're going to dig into the good stuff really soon. Before we get properly into this, T's and C's, of course, here's the fine print. Really quick disclaimer, this is not, cannot be, individual financial advice. You know, when we've got anything more than a couple of people and we're hitting a few hundred, a few thousand, having a conversation here, we've all got different lives. So everything that we're talking about here is general information. And from there, you have to adapt it to your own individual financial situation. If you'd like someone to give you individual financial advice, financial advisor is always the best bet. So on that note, let's bring in our wonderful panel of experts. Now, of course, I am host and also tech producer, so let me just bring them in here first. Right. First up, we have the wonderful Brad Olson, Chief Executive and Principal Economist at Informetrics, one of New Zealand's leading economic commentators, just casually making time for us. So really appreciate you coming in, Brad. We've also got Chef Alice Taylor. Now, you'll already know her from one of our most popular previous episodes of the podcast. She specializes in realistic, budget-friendly cooking. So many of you loved her tips, so we're bringing her back. She's also not afraid to talk about the bigger political issues impacting our grocery bills. And she's just launched her own YouTube channel. So if you are watching here on YouTube, head over to her channel as well, which is Alice Taylor Eats. That's right, isn't it, Alice?
Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. And then last, never least, let me bring in the wonderful Kirsty Healy. Now, she is a financial advisor and strategic coach for Enable Me. She's spent 25 years talking money for a living. She's seen up close what works, what doesn't, when this is all put into practice in the real world. So some great real tips ready, raring to go for you. Brad, I'm going to start with you because I said we're going to talk the lay of the land. I feel like you're the guy who is doing this all the time. Cost of living, otherwise known as inflation, people are really feeling the pinch right now. What is the current situation? Inflation is going up, down, a mix. What's going on?
At a headline level, we are seeing inflation that is not only higher than I think we'd all like, but re-accelerating. So headline inflation up to 2.7% over the last year. It was at 2.2 and has then sort of re-accelerated a bit further. However, when you break it down, as I think where you start to see the pressures coming through, so the likes of building a new house, actually 0.1% cheaper at the moment than it was a year ago, marginally. But how many of us are buying or building a new house each and every day? However, if you're buying food, we know that overall food price inflation up 5.0% over the last year. Energy prices are increasing at double-digit increases for the last 12 months. So what I think we're seeing is that at a headline level, inflation is much better contained than a couple of years back. But at a more detailed level, the very frequent costs that households are having to pay for, that's the stuff that's becoming more expensive and hitting you in the face a whole lot more.
Right. Okay. Because that is matching some of what I've seen around as well, where I've seen some analysis that the basic necessities, the things you can't avoid paying for, are going up, while some of the discretionary spending, the nice to haves, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call building a house a nice to have, but it's not so common, right? Those categories aren't as bad. So is that why we're feeling the pinch? Because it's categories we can't not spend on.
That's very much the point. You're totally right there. It's the frequent stuff. It's the necessities a lot more. And sometimes it's your sort of your necessary luxuries, your chocolate and coffee that are increasing at a much more brutal price increase than otherwise. What's interesting is that we're actually seeing a much larger proportion of items that Kiwis buy that are actually falling in price. About 36% of items that Stats NZ tracks fell in price in the June quarter compared to a year ago. It's just that stuff like furniture or clothes or some of that, yes, you'd like to spend on, but you don't need to buy day to day. All that important stuff that you're seeing, that's the stuff that's going up. It's your dairy costs, it's your meats, again, chocolate, coffee, olive oil, like all of that stuff, energy, rent, the vitals are costing you more. And I think that's why we're sort of being hit with it so much more intensely as households, because you can definitely defer some spending, but some stuff you need to buy just about every day, every week, that's the stuff that's hitting you still.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, I was looking at some of these prices because I was pulling it together in prep for this episode. And mince, supposedly the staple of cheap cooking, mince has gone up a huge amount. It was blowing my mind as I was going through all of these prices. We all know butter. We've all seen the headlines there. But I think mince was something like 18%. So that was a real shock to me when that came up. Alice, you specialize in cheap, realistic cooking, which I love it. We, as I say, use your apple muffins all the time. But how hard is it to deliver on the cheap, realistic cooking at the moment?
It's very difficult. And, it is possible to cook cheaply. And I try to show that on my page as much as possible. But I must admit, like designing these recipes, even, going back to mince, which was a real staple of sort of an affordable kind of, diet. I went to make a recipe literally last week and I was like, I can't do this. This is too expensive. This is crazy. So definitely it's getting more and more difficult. And it's, I guess, even more of a reminder to just go into the shop with an open mind, because you just don't know what the prices are going to be like. And it's definitely challenging when you're involving meat and dairy. I will say that. That's when it gets really tricky. And also baked goods as well. A lot of those staple ingredients that we love, eggs, butter, chocolate, and cream, they're becoming even more expensive. So I do really try my best to find ways to adjust recipes, but it's requiring constant adaptation and substitutes and stuff. Baking is definitely not as straightforward as it once was, that's for sure.
Well, exactly. When you're trying to do substitutes and things like that, how much food knowledge do you need in order to be making these substitutes? Is it someone like yourself who's a chef? You have such a wide range of knowledge. How stuck is the average person? Do you need to be getting a degree in Google Foo as well?
I mean, I think it's definitely challenging. And I really try to show that on my page, because once you know, like, you have a toolkit of a handful of substitutes, and I really want to do just a video on substitutes. It is easy to swap them out and everything, but it is tricky for sort of the everyday person to know. The reason why, like, I learned a lot of substitutes is actually from working in kitchens as a chef. You deal with a lot of allergies, And so you have to get really used to adjusting recipes. Like, bang, someone will come in with the most bizarre allergy. And so you start to train your mind to think about how you can swap out ingredients. And what I realized in a restaurant where you have such tight profit margins, the substitutes need to be cheap. And so that's how I learned. And for the everyday person, it is tricky, but I do try to kind of communicate that on my page. And always in the recipes, I'll have as many substitutes as I could possibly think of, so people understand that it is possible for sure.
Well, yeah, already getting some comments here from people who are really appreciating your recipes, your substitutes, and the ways that you give people more options. Are there some common substitutes that you could lay out for us now that you're finding can make things a little cheaper? Are there some go-tos?
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at, for example, eggs, you've got apple instead of an egg. So a lot of Americans have access to applesauce, but in New Zealand, it's not as common. You can just literally use a grated apple, or you can just make an apple puree, just boil some apples, mash it. That can work as an egg. You've also got chia seeds, or they're a bit pricey. So flax seeds and water can replace an egg. In terms of butter, I use a lot of oil in my recipes as opposed to butter. You just want to decrease the quantity down a little bit by like maybe 25%. And then in terms of dairy products, you've got, you know, any replacement, any milk, any yogurt, anything that you want can also be a replacement. I love using like coconut milk, for example, because the cans are quite cheap. So that's what I would say would be the main ones is the eggs, the butter and the dairy is a good way to replace. And then, of course, you've got lentils. So if you want to use mince, you can cut that by half by adding dried lentils and you can't even tell. So, yeah.
Love lentils for bulking things out. That's so good. Kirstie, when you talk to clients, because this is, you know, you're talking to people on the coalface of this every day, people who are literally coming to you and saying, I need to make my money work a little bit better. So when you're talking to clients, what are the areas that they're struggling with at the moment?
Yeah, so absolutely what Brad was pointing to was while core inflation might be within that 1% to 3% band, we're still seeing real troubles with that sticky domestic inflation. So what does that mean for you? It means all of those ongoing regular costs that you're paying that are a large part of your budget, like number one, cost of accommodation, right? Either your mortgage or your rent. So rent is one of those things that people are really struggling with at the moment. The accommodation in terms of the mortgage part, let me just put some context to that, because while interest rates are coming down, they're certainly still hurting people's budgets. And that's the reason for that is because there are still a lot of mortgages that are still fixed at the moment, like over 50% at the moment, something like $200 billion in mortgages are still fixed and won't be rolling off until perhaps September this year. So as you can imagine, that's a fixed cost that some people are not dealing with really well. Add into it everything that comes with the cost of accommodation. Your rates, your insurances, your water rates, you know, your power, as Brad mentioned, these are all at, you know, all-time highs for us. And I tell you what, I haven't seen my rates bill or my insurance bill go down recently. It has only gone up. We have just hearing continual stories from clients about, you know, 5%, 10% increases in those fixed costs of accommodation.
Yeah. And again, this is so hard, right? Because what are you going to do? Go live under a bridge? I mean, that's just ridiculous. So you have to deal with some of these costs. So when you're talking to clients and you're trying to manage these issues a little bit better, and we always talk about you can only spend less or earn more. Not many people are getting pay rises in this current economy. So a lot of people are looking to spend less. Are there many places of wiggle room where you can help people? What sort of areas do you look at, Kirstie?
Yeah, there absolutely are. And just taking mortgages as an example, most people think that just by negotiating just your interest rate, you know, you're going to save thousands. actually, that's actually true. You can save thousands. It's a really great starting point. But for most people, actually having a really good optimized mortgage structure in place that is personal to their situation, that really looks to reduce that interest load to them, is going to get people ahead super fast. And I'm talking about, whereas it might be thousands you save with a really good interest rate, you could be saving hundreds of thousands by getting your mortgage structure, you know, really working for you. Just one example.
It's just really funny. I've been saying this a lot recently. Just mildly bully your bank. There's nothing wrong with just gentle bullying between friends. But have these conversations, right? I think when we're all feeling the squeeze like this, the problem with so many of these core costs is they're big. That can also be the benefit, where if you can find a way to make a saving on them, it can, you have a lot of room for saving on that if you can find a way. So really important. Brad, I want to dig a bit more into these solutions soon, but I think some of the lay of the land of this is very interesting, because as we were talking about, you know, with the food, the butter, cheese, vegetables, really hard for people. And yet we're such a big producer of food. Is it unreasonable to think that New Zealanders should be getting a better deal on food when so much of it we're producing it ourselves?
Look, it's a common question. My goodness. Certainly in the butter debate recently, the biggest thing that we keep getting asked about is why don't we make it cheaper locally? However, at the same time, that's the stuff that New Zealand as a country makes the most money on, our exports. And you go and find me a business across the country that says, you know what, I'm not going to make money. I'm going to go and give it out for cheaper to everyone else to sort of feel good. You can only do that as a business for a pretty limited amount of time. And the reason I say that is because, again, taking butter as the prime example recently, in 2023, New Zealanders spent about $124 million on butter. We exported $5.2 billion. Which one do we care a lot more about? I care a lot more about the exports, because that's money that's then creating jobs out in rural and provincial New Zealand. It is a challenge. And I think that's why what we're seeing at the moment in terms of how households are responding is that, yes, there's a lot of pressure over, you know, the price of certain goods. But you are seeing people shop around a whole lot more. And, you know, we've talked about some of those options. And I thought it was interesting looking into the data. And Alice has already started talking about, you know, the substitutes. The likes of beef prices over the last year up 22% on average. The likes of lamb and mutton up 28%. Pork, though, pork costs are only up 0.8%. So a much, much more limited increase. We saw in some of our recent data as well, the likes of cauliflower, broccoli, and capsicum prices were all down in July compared to where they were a year ago. Now, I'm not sure exactly what meal you create out of all of those, but I do think that, again, people are having to be a lot more nimble because, you know, pricing pressures are real, but increasingly that's why price signals are so important. As a household, as a person, you go, that one there, that looks cheaper, I'll sort of go to that for a minute. So, yes, there are challenges. Yes, New Zealand's a big food-producing nation. I worry, though, that if we, for example, tried to subsidise a bunch of food, who's out there across the country willing to give up their job because the exports aren't going quite as well, right? That is literally, at the end of the day, the sort of trade-off you would have to make.
And that's really hard, isn't it? Because all of this economic stuff is so interconnected. And I think the jobs for most people have to come first. Costs and all of that are secondary. So keeping everyone employed, so important. On the food issue, is there a bit of a seasonal element to this? Because I noticed you comparing there year on year, which is great. What a pro. Because I was looking at some of the graphs around this, where you do see a huge spike every year in food costs around winter. And then often in spring, it gets a bit cheaper. Now, this is obviously generally speaking, it doesn't happen that way every time, but we do have that trend. I mean, we're having this conversation tail end of winter. Do you think there's a seasonal element to this? Maybe is there a bit of hope on the horizon? Things could get a bit easier soon?
Oh, definitely for some stuff. I mean, have you seen the price of tomatoes at the moment? Like, it's like $16 a kg. Go into winter, you know, into summer, some people can't give away tomatoes for free. You know, they've just got so many. So, yeah, you'll definitely see that sort of seasonal element. For example, we know as well that during winter, Stats NZ can't even find enough strawberries to price in the basket. Come summer, you've got a whole lot more availability. So yeah, there's definitely a seasonal pattern. What's also interesting though with the seasonal pattern is that I'm not going to say New Zealand's the only country to have it, but we're much more focused on the seasonal pattern than other countries. I've had a look, for example, at UK food prices, and they actually don't really have a summer or winter sort of shift around, particularly in produce. That's the area you'd normally see it in because growing conditions in summer are a lot better. Growing conditions in winter, you need a hothouse or similar. The UK, though, doesn't fluctuate much during summertime, wintertime. And so I think part of it is that, again, when New Zealand is not able to produce, we've got to import particularly fruit and veggies from other warmer parts of the world. You know, we're getting fruit at the moment from the US. All of that's so much more expensive, which is why I think we talk so much about buying seasonally, because when stuff is expensive, it's very hard to say, you know, make a nectarine salad in the middle of winter when it's super expensive. In the middle of summer, yeah, super easy, but people are having to adjust because of not only what's, you know, the price of stuff, but also what's available. Like sometimes you can't get any good produce because it's all taken, you know, 5 months to be shipped and it's a bit sort of half rotten. So yes, we're having to sort of care about that seasonality a whole lot more.
Now, we're going to come back a little bit to mortgages and housing costs because, Kirsty, we're getting a whole bunch of questions in the chat from people who heard you say you can save masses if you get the structure right, and now they want to know more, which, love this. Part of the problem, right, is it can be a little bit horses for courses. For those who've only just joined the podcast, do go back. We've done some fantastic episodes on things you can do with revolving credit or offset or the various structures there. So we've done some really deep dives. If you have a little look in the Making Sense archive, check those out. There's many episodes on that. So do check them out. But, you know, just for a little bit of a taster here, you know, we've got, I believe it's Gary here saying, do you have recommendations on how to structure your mortgage, where to get advice? We're about to start drawing up our first mortgage, which, Gary, I love that for you. That's so exciting. But it is daunting, right? So, Kirsty, where does someone start to figure out a good structure that works for their circumstances?
Yeah, thanks for reiterating that as well, because we are all different, right? So what might work for one person is absolutely not going to work for the next person. So starting point, are you good with this stuff? Can you sift through it yourself, or actually do you need some help and can you get someone on board to assist you? I'm very pro working with a mortgage broker. Get someone on your team who is good. You know, talk to your friend base, talk to your network, get some names in terms of someone who has really worked for them and get some real expertise on board. Because actually, do you know what? You need someone who can go through the numbers with you in terms of what your balance sheet looks like. What does your income look like? What are your expenses looking like? And actually, what's left over at the end of the day? Because ultimately, that's going to play a big part in terms of getting that really, really good optimized mortgage structure in place that's really going to pay you down sooner. A big portion of what you were talking about, Francis, around that, you know, using offsets and revolving credit facilities is talking to the point around where you have your money, i.e., if you've got a mortgage and you've got some savings, at the moment we know that savings aren't earning a heck of a lot of interest at the moment, so can we offset them? You know, can we apply them in a way that then allows them to be reaccessible to you if something pops up, you know, a curveball, like COVID maybe, or somewhere where we've, you know, something pops up that, you know, the car blows up and we need to reaccess those funds. So it's all about having resilience, obviously through savings, but having flexibility by being able to utilize them and get ourselves ahead sooner by reducing our interest costs. So yes, absolutely get some help on board with a trusted advisor.
Yeah. I'm also very pro getting some good advice. I mean, the wonderful thing about mortgage advisors is they often are paid by the banks rather than you. So that can be a great thing as well. But you can also, there's all sorts of different ways you can get advice on your mortgage. And I think what people often underestimate is starting with your money situation and also your money mindset. If you're someone who's been good with debt in the past or not, that can hugely impact your strategy. And I think it's not necessarily that you have to become this person who's amazing with money. You have to become someone who is honest about where you are and then adapt the strategy to that. You can have great strategies with your mortgage, with your money, while still being someone who instinctively isn't great with debt. Keep working on that muscle, get better with it. But you can start off with a more realistic strategy that says, okay, I'm not great with debt, so a revolving isn't for me. But maybe you are a little debt angel, a revolving is good. And when you work things through with an advisor and you talk to them and you get that structure set up, one of the questions they should be talking to you about is your history with money, the way you've handled it in the past, your mindset. And then that will help you build up a structure that works with your lifestyle, right?
Absolutely. And look, a revolving credit facility is not the only structure that we can lean into here. There are many other options available to you, and obviously many different services and options and products across various providers, which I tell you what, nobody has time to do that research ourselves, do we? So, you know, we utilize the expertise in an advisor to be able to bring all of that together for us, obviously according to our own goals. Absolutely also love what you said right there. We start where we are. We start with what we've got. We recognize where the gaps are for us, and then we lean into expertise to fill those gaps for us.
100%. We do it everywhere else in life. I don't know why we all suddenly expect ourselves to be money maestros. Kirsty, I think one of the things as well is when we've got people looking at sort of these wider core categories, right? Opening up the conversation again to trying to figure out how you get your core spending under control. It's hard to offer budget advice on that, right? Because the idea of, you know, cutting back on coffee, I think a lot of people have heard that before. We know we can do that. We know to look in those areas. Many people are already doing it. Are there some ways to cut back on spending that can fly under the radar? Maybe tips and tricks that aren't talked about as much.
Absolutely. Giving up your coffee seems to be such a popular analogy. And the other one is the Avo on toast, right? You've got to give up your Avo on toast in order to be able to do well in life and succeed financially. Not true. That is absolutely not true. Essentially, what we know with working with clients is that you can fritter up to 15% of your money. It could be going walkabout. The problem is, where is it going walkabout? And the only way that we can really dial into understanding that is tracking your spend. So, you know, do you know actually where your money is going actually, or do you just have a hazy idea of where it's gone? I'm not saying that we need to have a really austere budget. We want to have something that really covers our best life, right? It's all about picking up what's left over and having that working productively. So in terms of sort of my top five areas to look at, I'm absolutely looking at interest and fees. So whether that's mortgages, whether it's personal debt, absolutely bank fees. Don't get me started on PayWave and credit card fees, which we know are going in May next year, but it couldn't come too soon. The mortgage structure piece I was talking about, absolutely, you can save a lot of money there. Number two is those inefficient insurances. So, you know, we know that we're paying up to 8 to 10% more if we're paying an installment rather than annually. That's a cost that we're paying. But actually, do you have the right insurances? Have you played around talking with a broker around if you can, you know, reduce your premium by increasing your excess, as an example? So insurances is absolutely an area that you need to review frequently. Third thing is utilities. So there is a lot of what I would consider to be lazy tax that are sitting within your utilities. And that could be as simple as going to a website like Passwitch and just checking up and comparing, you know, what are you paying? Is there a better deal out there? Fourthly, subscriptions. So I don't know about you, but I know, and you know, over my lifetime, the money I've thrown towards gym subscriptions that haven't actually resulted in me getting fitter So you pick that up when you're tracking, right? Anything that is sitting there, eating away, you know, coming out every week. Additional to that is online streaming, right? Like, do we need 5 different streaming services, or can we get away with just a couple? And can we share, you know, can we go to our friend's place to watch something on Netflix and have neon ourselves? And then the fifth one is exactly what we've been talking around with food, but it's more to the point of the extra trips to the supermarket. So I've had a client who thought they were spending $350. We tracked, they ended up, they were spending $650 by the time we added everything else in. By the time we got round to the end of the testing period, they'd saved themselves $13,000 in a year just by tracking what they're spending on food and putting a meal plan in place.
That is really powerful. And this is why I talk to people a lot about, you know, the power of a money diary, which I really do think it's quite confronting. If you even just track your spending for 1 week, there will be things in there that you don't need and that aren't making you happy. And I think those are the two key things for me. I'm fine with people spending money on things that make them happy, as long as it truly is, you know. But, you know, it's a great filter of, do I need this? Does it make me happy? And there's often things that are sneaking in there that when you think about it, no, really, honestly, neither of them are. And you say about, you know, the annual spend on insurance rather than paying in installments, you know, that was something I did an episode. What was it? It was July 27th. Being too polite could cost you $240,000. And it shocked me when I ran the numbers on those core categories, because those core categories, yeah, you really can spend. I only compared 6 or 7 categories. It actually could end up being a lot more than that. But you can spend so much money, and it's just negotiating things, and things like an annual bill instead of a monthly bill can save you so much. Little tips and tricks are really useful. Alice, you mentioned before about some of the substitutes that we can do with our food. And people were loving those in the comments. Oh, actually, just before we move on, I am going to mention a couple of comments from people who have given a shout out to You Need a Budget as well, which is a tracking app, which some people are saying they use and really enjoy. Other people also saying they can compare grocery prices using the Grocer app, which is G-R-O-C-E-R. Love that app. It's great. So a couple of shout outs from the comments there. Good tips and tricks happening. Keep it coming, team. But Alice, when we're talking about these substitutes and things we can do to try and make the supermarket cheaper, I mean, things like avoiding butter, shopping seasonally, how much of this can we do without also sacrificing some of our nutritional goals? I mean, food is very important for health too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm no nutritionist, but absolutely it can cost to try to consider your health. And I also think that, and we've talked about this before as well, Francis, that there's a lot of stuff sold in the supermarkets with that sort of health gloss over it. I mean, bone broth is a great example. I mean, I just do not understand how, you know, bone broth is so expensive. So I also think there's that coming into play as well. So I definitely think it can make it more expensive, but it doesn't necessarily need to be. And I really do think going back to shopping seasonally, it's one of the most important things that you can do to stay in budget, but also, you know, stay healthy as well. So, and I think that a lot of the problem is coming online from Instagram as well. You're seeing recipes that are really polished and they're using, you know, capsicums and tomatoes. And I haven't cooked a tomato, for example, eaten a tomato since summer. So I just don't buy them in winter. It's not a thing that I do. So I definitely think that it is difficult. And that's one of the things, you know, the biggest problem issues that I have with the supermarkets is the cost of the sort of healthy ingredients, you know, good protein and fruit and veg and dairy, which we need, but definitely shopping seasonally. And going back to what Kirsty said as well, cutting back your shops, like one shop a week is all you need. That's going to make a massive difference as well. And then figuring out, you know, what can you make at home? So bone broth, for example, or stock, you can make it at home and it's so cheap. So it's also figuring out the things that you can make at home and not falling into those sort of very health glossy, you know, items in the supermarket that cost so much money.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think there is sometimes we fall into these expectations that can be fed by things like social media or just the cultural expectations overall. Things to be glossy, to be cooking from scratch every time. And I see people saying, oh, it's more expensive to cook at home than to, you know, than if you're going out. Maybe if you're buying everything from scratch every time, maybe. But, you know, if you get like a spice mix that can be used every single time or some spices that you use across many different recipes, if you have some core staples. I remember in the episode that you and I did that people found so helpful, you talked about the idea of a staple pantry. Can you just, for anyone who hasn't listened to that episode, I mean, definitely go back and listen to Alice's previous episode because she's brilliant at this. But just give us a quick recap of the staple pantry and how that can help people.
Yeah, so for me, the way I look at sort of my staple pantry is kind of like a wardrobe. So figure out like what are your favorite five meals that you cook at home that you like to cook that don't take you too long because, you know, time is money. And you'll see commonalities across them. And then what you just basically do is identify, you know, three carbs that you love. So bread in the freezer, pasta and rice is all I need for me. I don't go and get lots of different fancy grains here or there. And then you maybe need, you know, one or two kinds of protein that I keep in the fridge. So for me, it's chicken. Normally the drumsticks are the cheapest ones. So I buy those and I can debone them as well. And then also buying three spices, you know, one green herb, maybe some paprika, something else that you like, and just playing around every week with what's on special in terms of meat, or if you don't eat meat, you know, your other substitutes, what's on special in terms of the vegetables, and just mixing and matching. I think like we've gotten way too strict about, and it's kind of ironic coming from me because I write recipes, but we're getting really strict about recipes. You know, not everything, you don't need to have everything at one time. You can swap rice out for pasta all crumbled up, you know, if that's all that you have. So I think that the staple pantry is a good base, and that's what I do when I create the recipes as well. I have my staple pantry, I look at it and I go, okay, let's go to the supermarket and see what recipe I'll make this week. And I think that that's a really good way of doing it rather than reading a recipe with 10 ingredients and you need to buy, you know, dukkha or some other random ingredient that you might not have and use, you know, for another couple of months. I try to avoid that as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I've also got to say, you know, this is certainly not chef advice, certainly not nutritionist advice for me, but I am currently loving, as someone with two small kids, breakfast time is when me and my husband polish through leftovers. And it's great. Why does breakfast always have to be, it's like fruity or sweet or whatever? No, it's a leftover cottage pie for us. And it's actually a great way to start the day. So I'm just saying, this is maybe not the hot tip that people were looking for, but yeah, get into it. Why not?
I just wanted to say as well, it's also about sort of being, and I always say this, just being proud of what you're putting on the table and what you're eating. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It is really expensive. And I try to be as like optimistic as possible that you can cook cheaply, but it is difficult. And so if you're putting food on the table, be proud of what you're making. It doesn't have to be perfect. If you're having, I have leftovers for breakfast all the time and I love it. So I think that's really, really important. We put so much pressure on ourselves. I don't want people to put even more pressure on themselves when it comes to cooking food, especially in this economy. It's just crazy.
Exactly. Brad, what were you about to say?
Oh, one of the interesting things we're seeing in the data as well, and I think this goes to why leftovers are such a good option, is because Kiwis are increasingly needing to find more convenient options. We're time poor. In fact, in the latest Stats NZ Consumer Price Index reweight, they go back and look at spending patterns from New Zealanders every 3 years. And for the first time, we've included the likes of meal prep kits in the basket because that, you know, that's increasingly what people are looking at. And I think the challenge for a lot of people is that, you know, and Alice has sort of just highlighted this, it'd be great if you could go out and, you know, sort of whip something up fully every single time, but that becomes expensive and it becomes tough to do when you've got such a limited amount of time. So when you've got those staples that you can sort of add in one or two additional ingredients rather than having to go buy the entire new recipe at any one time, I think that's a big help. One question, though, and if I can ask Alice, because she's the expert, how good, you know, how much should we or could we trust? I've got a few friends who often throw what they've got in the fridge or similar into ChatGPT and sort of say, you know, come up with a recipe. Is that a legit hack, or am I just getting hacked myself?
No, I mean, I was actually asked this on RNZ like 2 weeks ago, my thoughts on ChatGPT and making recipes. Honestly, I think if it helps, it helps, and I'm all for it. And I think, you know, I've tried it a couple of times, and I do think it actually does work and it does help. And I think if it encourages people to sort of get creative and use whatever they have in the pantry, I always say, like, as well with my types of recipes, I'm like, I never want people to go out and have to buy the ingredients for my recipes. I hope that as much as humanly possible, you've got the stuff already or some substitute. So I think that ChatGPT can absolutely help that. And for me, you know, if it helps people cook cheaply, I think great. And I've used it before as well. So I think it's all good.
I love it. And you've absolutely taken the words out of the commenters' mouths there as well, because we were getting some comments there in the live stream saying, chuck it into AI, use up leftovers that way, use up the things at the end of the week that way. So there we go. Hey, Brad, to take this back out a bit, because we've got some people in the comments raising a very fair question here, that it is also the wider issue. I mean, there's so much we can do individually, but there's also the issue of how many other big issues that as individuals we can't really take on are playing into this, you know, the global, the geopolitical. And so how much of this can we control? How much of this is coming from the international events that we're a little bit at the mercy of?
I mean, the international one is a big one at the moment. And again, if you look at, I mean, we're talking a lot about food costs, but that's because that is the area that I think is concerning us the most. That is, it's international pressures that are driving what's happening here at home. You look at the likes of chocolate and coffee prices, both of those have increased in the last year. For the likes of coffee, it's been too wet in some areas like Vietnam, which produces coffee beans, which has ruined production. You've still got lots of people that want to drink coffee, not quite as many coffee beans available. That's seen prices rise. The likes of cocoa, other direction, it was too dry and hot in the Ivory Coast. You didn't see as much cocoa bean production. Again, demand for chocolate high, supply not quite as big, and so prices have increased. Even dairy and meat, you've seen increases in both of those because there's not quite as much milk or meat around the world. US, for example, they've got the lowest number of cows in like 50 years. So they don't have quite as much meat, and that's why those prices are increasing. The challenge, I think, is that a lot of these, if you actually look below the surface, the real worry I have is that a lot of these are driven by climatic changes. You know, you've got big shifts in some areas that are, again, too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry. It's probably not going to change anytime soon. And so, again, I think the variety that we're having to get used to is intense. A couple of years back when the Russian invasion of Ukraine happened, we saw sunflower oil prices skyrocket because Eastern Europe produced so much sunflower oil overall. So, like, we are a bit more beholden to these challenges, either because we're not able to import stuff at quite the same lower price, or because our exports, and we are an exporting country, are costing us a fair bit more. So, like I say, the double-edged sword there a little bit from an export point of view is that costs are higher for households, yes, but also the money we're making from those are also better. And that is, again, a real catch-22 at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So is there anything we should be asking the government to do on our behalf? Is there anything that can be done?
Well, one of the areas, right, is if we're looking at this and saying, look, the cost pressures are quite intense and we're not seeing any real sort of shift there. I know there's talk around the likes of introducing more competition and similar to supermarkets. I would sort of raise the point that New Zealand is a very small, very skinny, long country. If I'm an overseas provider, I'm looking at New Zealand and going, Auckland seems big enough to put a supermarket or so, but everywhere else is pretty small if I've got to then create my entire own distribution network. Now, yes, we should work on competition, always. However, in my mind, a bigger part of this is that one of the reasons we wouldn't have to be so worried about price rises to quite the same degree is if we all had better pay over time. And so, like, getting those, you know, much better employment opportunities, having the ability to have pay rises to move up the sort of skills chain, you know, put it this way, it's pretty difficult to pay the bills if you don't have a job. So if we can sort of, again, provide those opportunities, I think that's probably more where we get the wins. There's a lot of other structural bits and pieces. I mean, one challenge that you've seen the Commerce Commission identify is that it's actually just difficult to compare prices at supermarkets, which is why you're seeing more electronic tagging. I think that's great. I mean, when I go shopping, that's what I do. I scan the bottom of those little electronic tags and go, well, you know, which one is cheapest per litre or is cheapest per 100 grams. Those things help, but they are sort of small-ish in comparison. Overall, if we can try and get those more productive jobs, that's a big one. And I think for the government, one of the real frustrations I have, without wanting to turn this too political, is we spend a lot of time at the moment on weird little social things that I don't think many people care about. The economy doesn't seem to get nearly as much of a look in, and I'd rather we focus a lot more time and energy on getting that stuff done.
Yeah. And Alice, you've also been quite outspoken. I mean, you offer up some amazing, affordable recipes, but you've also spent a lot of time, and kudos to you for doing this on social media, because sometimes I just don't have the stomach for it myself, and I love that you do. But, you know, to talk about the fact that there needs to be wider change, what changes would you like to see? And do you get messages from people in your inbox, considering you've got such a big audience, on those pain points, saying what changes they want to see, you know, ear to the ground and also your own thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I did that series interviewing politicians, which was, you know, an incredible opportunity, very interesting sort of talking about politics on Instagram. It's pretty tough situation. Like I will say that I definitely grew a thick skin, but for me it was really important because, you know, there's one part of it which is telling people to cook cheaply and or to show people how to cook cheaply, but also there's a situation which I just think is just not right, which is that it's too difficult for people to feed their families in New Zealand. And I want to acknowledge that actually I think there needs to be changes done by government. It's not the responsibility of us. You know, and I mean, I'm no expert in this field, nowhere near as expert as you guys, but I would like to see more competition. And then, of course, what Brad was talking about as well, there's one part which is obviously the price is coming down, but there's another part which is that people have more money in their pocket. And so I think that will be absolutely something that's really important. And yeah, I get a lot of messages every day, and I actually find a lot of them quite upsetting. And I know what it's like, you know, it's really tough. And it just, you can feel it when you go into the supermarket too. You can feel the energy in the room. So I really hope that it becomes easier for people. And I agree with Brad as well. There seems to be, you know, focus on certain things and, you know, the economy, or people are just struggling to feed themselves and their families. And I think that's such a significant issue. And I will continue to talk about it as much as possible, because I don't think that the only solution is people learning to cook cheaply. I think there needs to be changes done so it's easier for people to feed themselves.
100%. I'm so with you. I just feel like the deal should be you're going to work every day. You're working hard, especially often in these days. If you're the standard sort of four-person New Zealand family, both parents heading off to work, it shouldn't be this hard for people. It shouldn't be this much of a crunch for people. I feel like that's the deal, and that deal needs to be delivered on a little bit. Look, I think we're running up on time, which is a shame because there's so much we could dig into here. But of course, everyone also has to go back to those jobs and make sure they do keep those incomes coming in. So we'll start with you, Kirsty, but we'll whip around everyone on this. If there was one thing that you wanted people to be able to do that you think would help them with their money at a time like this, what is your big recommendation to people? Kirsty, starting with you.
Well, my top tip is to seek expertise. So look, whether that is DIYing by following Alice on Instagram, another expert in the field, or by seeking some actual personal financial advice on your situation, it's probable you don't know your own capability. So it's about leaning on people's expertise when you're super time poor. And if you find yourself stuck in the same patterns, then it's time to do that triage and get some fresh eyes on your situation from someone who knows a few things. Because essentially, money habits that you've got, or habits that you've got that lead you to doing things a certain way, like cooking a certain way, those same habits will not be the same habits that will get you out of that. So sometimes we just need a bit of a steer in the right direction. So my top tip is get curious, ask for help, and I promise you, your future self is going to thank you for it.
Oh, 100%. And I so agree. I mean, there's a lot you can do DIY. It's fantastic. But I do think there's also so much you can do to talk to someone like a financial advisor. or whatever other area that you are dealing with. I've actually got an episode coming in just a couple of weeks. I know everyone's been asking for it. I'm really sorry. It's taken me ages, but just in a couple of weeks, I've got an episode coming on finding a financial advisor. And I will say it's often cheaper than people expect. So I do think it's really worth doing, and stay tuned. Make sure you, you know, hit subscribe so that that one comes out automatically and you get that financial advisor chat, hopefully help you at a time like this. Alice, what would be your top tip for people at a time like this if they only did one thing?
I mean, from a food, I'll talk from a food perspective because that's what I know about. But I think for me, figuring out that staple pantry and keeping an open mind when you go to the supermarket, you've got your staple pantry, but you're looking at the specials and you're adjusting your recipes to what, you know, what's on season, what's in special. I think that makes a big difference. And also just, you know, again, being careful, this is a slightly different tip, but also being careful where you're getting your sort of information, your recipes from online, information from Instagram. A lot of it can put unnecessary pressure on yourself. And I think just making sure that you're sort of following people that are making you feel good and empowered and giving you the right knowledge and tips, I think is really important. So that would be my advice.
That's absolutely solid advice there. Really appreciate that. All right, Brad, we'll finish with you. What would be your top tip at a time like this?
Look, I'd probably say the KISS principle, right? Keep it simple, stupid. Don't try too many things at once. Like if you try and change everything in your life to make everything so much more financially better, you're probably going to mess up on all of them and retrench. You're going to go back to what you did before. Choose something, give it a good crack. Once that works, once it's embedded, move to the next one. Like we talked about subscriptions before, one of my favorites that I hear people do is they'll go and buy a Prezi card, only a certain amount of money, or they'll have like a credit card that's going to expire and they put it on that. And hey, when it expires, did they use it? Did they notice that they're not seeing that subscription again? Once they've cleaned that up, then they're going to move on to energy or whatever else it might be. But I'd sort of, given we were all time poor, given there's so many challenges, like don't try and bite off too much. But the biggest one, I think this is why I love being able to come on for a conversation like this, talk about it more. Like money is only in control of us because we let it. Like talk about your opportunities. Yeah, like Alice says, don't take everything you read or see on Instagram as gospel, but take it and think, is this relevant to me or not? Because I do feel like sort of a problem shared is still a problem halved.
Oh, I think absolutely spot on and great tips there. And that's exactly why we do need to have these sorts of conversations, right? Because so much you can pick up from even just talking to your friends and family. One of my favorite financial tips that I still trot out all the time is the idea of rotating what you cut back on. So you might cut back on food for a month, or you might cut back on your social life for a month, or you might cut right back on transport for a month. And then by rotating it that way, you never feel like you're in this endless monetary diet. And that is a tip that came from one of my university friends who does not work in finance, who does not have anything to do with this. We were just gasbagging. And that's what she does. And it was brilliant. So I think there is so much you can get from talking to your friends. So on that note, thank you, my friends, for coming on. That was Brad Olson from Infometrics, Chef Alice Taylor, Kirsty Healy from Enable Me. Such good tips and tricks. I really hope this helped everyone. We hooned through as many of your questions as we could as well, but if there's more, you can always get in touch with me. We can do another one of these webinars where we talk about it a bit more. Until next time, though, hit subscribe on Making Sense wherever you prefer to get your podcasts, whether that's Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else. And until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.